Good evening and welcome. It's KBC Arts, arts and entertainment in our region as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we'll hear from Jan Daly, a former Miss California who toured with Bob Hope on his USO tours and has a new CD out, When Sunny Gets Blue. First, though, Rick Dulock has more on an upcoming celebration and learning opportunity on the Morongo Reservation, the Dragonfly Gala.
The Dorothy Ramone Learning Center will celebrate Southern California's Native American cultures at their 2017 Dragonfly Gala. It's Saturday, August 12th at Morongo Community Center on the Morongo Reservation. We reached out to Ernest and June Siva to find out about the Dorothy Ramone Learning Center and the Dragonfly Gala. Ernest and June, thank you so much for joining me today. And can you share your titles or your positions with the center?
We're co-founders of our nonprofit organization, and I'm the president and June is the vice president.
Very good. Well, let's start off with the Learning Center. Tell us about the Learning Center and its purpose, please.
Well, our motto is to save and share cultures, language, art, whatever there is that has to do with Indians of Southern California. So it isn't just the Morongo or any specific tribe.
So Southern California in general, as far as Native American culture.
And that's right. That's our long-term goal.
And where is the Dorothy Ramone Learning Center?
Right downtown Banning, one block north of Ramsey on San Gregorio Avenue.
We have a couple of buildings with multiple addresses, but our gathering hall is 127 North San Gregorio, and our main building is 111 North San Gregorio Avenue.
So if somebody puts that in their GPS, they'll find it.
That's right.
At what times during the week or what is the center open?
Since we're all volunteers, we're only open when we have an event or by appointment. So we have a sign on our window that if anybody wants to meet with us and we're not there, we have our phone number there and we can be there in 15, 20 minutes.
And do you hope to have regular hours at the center at some point as you grow?
Yes, we do, especially because we're developing a library and an oral archive. And we've had interns from Cal State San Bernardino working with us on that. And we definitely hope to have some regular hours for people to use these things. We also would like to have a gift shop one day, so we have plans.
But at the Learning Center, there is Native American art and information about Native American art and culture?
Oh, yes. And our library has gotten quite large now, and researchers have used it, and also the students at Morongo School have been there a few times.
Very good. Well, let's talk about the Dragonfly Gala. It's a fundraiser, correct?
It is our major fundraiser for the year, and we usually have around 300 to 400 people come, and we have to have it at Morongo Community Center because our facility there is too small for a crowd like that, and so we're grateful to Morongo for letting us use their space.
So that's the Morongo Community Center for the Dragonfly Gala. It's Saturday, August 12th, and that's on the Morongo Reservation. If our listeners RSVP and attend the event, what will their experience include?
We'll have educational displays. Language, the San Manuel group of linguists are going to have an exhibit of the language lessons in the Serrano language. Then the Morongo educational group will also have similar displays.
The Gilman Ranch hands are going to bring a special wagon to have on display that was part of our history of our past area. And there's going to be bird singing and dancing. Also, our big silent auction already has over 100 items in it.
Yeah, June is in charge of that, so she knows firsthand.
Yeah, very good.
We have flute players, too, so you hear some beautiful flute music.
And the flute music will include some bird singing and dancing, yes?
Well, the flute music is provided by a group that meets regularly at our center the second Saturday, and it's open to anyone who wants to learn about the flute or how to play or even sometimes to make flutes. And they are, every year have brought their students, and they do a fine program. They play throughout. Bird singing is represented by Morongo and the Madrigal family, well-known group who perform dance and singing of the bird songs. Bird songs are music of the Southland that we all hold in common.
Very nice. I'm speaking with Ernest and June Siva from the Dorothy Ramone Learning Center. They're celebrating Southern California's Native American cultures at their 2017 Dragonfly Gala, Saturday, August 12th at Morongo Community Center on the Morongo Reservation. What time will the event start?
It's from 4 until 8 p.m. And I forgot to mention about the food. My goodness, the caterers are specialists in Native foods, and we'll have barbecue turkey, pit roasted beef, acorn, gravy, pinto beans, prickly pear blossoms. It's really a fun time to sample things like mesquite cookies and chia pops.
So a lot of the things that are the cultural foods of the people of Southern California Native descent.
That's right, yeah.
Excellent. Well, tell us about the Community Dragonfly Exchange. It was on your flyer, and it looks very interesting.
Yeah, this is the first time we have tried that. We're asking people to bring a dragonfly, or there'll be a chance to create one at the gala, and then you can take one home. So you're going to bring a dragonfly and take one home. Dragonflies are our theme this year, along with education, which brings us to the Dragonfly Award we give each year.
This year, two recipients will be present, two ladies in this case, high achievers, and we're really excited about this. The dragonfly actually comes from a song, a lullaby from my childhood. I presented that in teaching, and it became a regular fixture as well as a theme in our operation.
So the Dragonfly Exchange, people who come can bring a dragonfly of any kind. They could paint one. They could bring a dragonfly pin or a necklace or something that they made themselves, and then they leave that and they pick one to take home.
That's right. And it even includes writing, so poetry or a song, would be part of this also.
Excellent, excellent. Ernest and June Siva are with the Dorothy Ramone Learning Center. They're holding the 2017 Dragonfly Gala in support of the center on Saturday, August 12th at the Morongo Community Center. Well, how can KVCR listeners find out more information and RSVP for the event?
You can call 951-849-7736. And there's always an answering machine on. That's the number of the center. And we check it every day. And we'll get back to you with information. And we don't have actual tickets. We have a list. So when you call and reserve a space, you'll go on the list, and you can either pay in advance. $50 is the individual ticket price. We're on Facebook, and we also have a blog, dorothyramone.blogspot.com. But look for us on Facebook. I think that's where most of the information about it is. And if they want to contact us by email, they can also go to eandjsiva@gmail.com. That's our email. And so we can answer any questions about it or take their reservations by email, too.
So that's eandjsiva@gmail.com or call 951-849-7736. So if you're interested in the 2017 Dragonfly Gala in support of the Dorothy Ramone Learning Center, that event will take place on Saturday, August 12th at the Morongo Community Center, celebrating Native American cultures and art. Thank you so much, Ernest and June Siva with the Dorothy Ramone Learning Center. Thanks for being on KVC Arts today.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Rick. More information on the upcoming Dragonfly Gala at dorothyramone.org. Also on Facebook, Dragonfly Gala 2017. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. Online and on mobile devices at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Jan Daly is a former Miss California who was with Bob Hope on his USO tours and has recently returned to her singing career with a disc that started at number 5 on the charts and rose from there. The CD has a number of standards and some original tunes as well, including the song that kicks off the disc, Come On Daddy.
Come on, Daddy. Come on, honey. Let's go dancing, real romance tonight. What a feeling when we go reeling. Sweet me, darling.
We'll be talking about the new album, The Way of a Woman, and several of the songs on this one you wrote yourself. Several wonderful standards as well. I'd like to just go ahead and kick off with the first three on the disc are yours. But the first one, Come On Daddy. Now, that's a song to start a disc with. I'd love to hear about this song, how it came together. Tell me all about this one.
This is interesting because this was kind of the end of the album, time-wise. And I thought, you know, I'd like to write something that was kind of like the McGuire sisters, you know, that kind of an attitude. And so I think I wrote it maybe an hour. And yeah, I mean, it just came to me organically, I guess you would say. You know, I grew up with my parents playing big band records, so I had that influence going into it. And I just thought it would be fun. And I remember Jack Siegel saying, do you really want to include this?
Oh, my gosh.
You know, he was kind of questioning it. And I said, yeah, I think I do. It's kind of a fun song. And I love dancing, and that's kind of how it all came together. I think when we first came out with it, and Smooth Jazz picked it up, and I was like, really? They really want to play this? I mean, I guess so much of this album is a shock to me, and I'm loving every moment of it, of course, that people are appreciating these songs. So here I am riding this wave, and I love every minute of it.
You've stated that the singing bug hit you after your first solo at 11. What was that song that just grabbed you like that?
It was Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And I actually was probably much younger than that. I think I was maybe 5 or 6. And after seeing Wizard of Oz, I turned to my mom, as she tells me much later. She said, Mommy, that's what I want to do when I grow up.
Oh, my gosh.
Kids dream a lot, and boy, I was sure a dreamer. And I imagined myself on the screen singing and acting and doing all those things as a young child. And I remember directing plays and musicals in my garage, roller skating.
Excellent.
And so I guess I just grew up with all this fascination in the arts.
And so it was a Harold Arlen tune. Was it the songwriting or was the fact that it was Judy Garland up there singing it?
I think it was visual for me. It's funny, my very first solo was at a church at Christmas time, and I sang O Little Town of Bethlehem. And I remember my parents sitting in the back row because they had no idea that I had this adult voice. When I would be home practicing piano and singing, when they would go by, I would go, you know, I would do all these crazy things because I was always embarrassed practicing in front of anyone, and
sure,
still am to this point. And so they were just surprised that this, as I said, adult voice came out of this 11-year-old.
In the back row, were they hiding just in case it wasn't?
Yes, they were going to make a quick exit. If what they always heard at home was going to come out of my voice.
I'm trying to sort out the timeline here. You're traveling with Bob Hope on USO tours, I believe one of which was in 1971. That's another thing that I'd like to address again. Was that after your stint as Miss California?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. I was still in college, so I might have been 19. You know, Miss California can open a lot of doors. I was Miss Bundale, and the mayor took me to the Hollywood Palladium, And backstage, of course, was Lawrence Welk and his orchestra. And, of course, my mayor said, oh, and Miss California, she's a great singer. And the next thing I knew, the curtains were opening, and I was singing in front of Lawrence Welk's orchestra. And then Mr. Welk asked me if I would be on his television show. And that was my parents' favorite show. Not mine, but my parents' show. And eventually asked me to be the, what's it called, the champagne lady, and to take over for Norma Zimmer, who was such a sweet lady. And, you know, this is when rock and roll was starting, and I did not want to be the champagne lady, you know. And I chose not to accept his offer and went on to travel with five guys in a rock and roll band. And I came home, got a manager and an agent, and then started to really do some significant dates with comedians, and then that led to a series called Here Come the Stars.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, like 1969, I think. So I had that under my belt, then was asked to sing for a movie for a title song, and that was like my dream come true. And just to sneak in that I had cancer very early at 23, and it just so happened that I had been in the hospital like 3 days before I was to fly to Rome to record that movie song. And I just said to the doctor, how do we make this happen? and of course, he was saying, well, you shouldn't fly, you know, you should. And I said, no, how do we make this happen? I am getting on that plane. And so here I am, you know, 23 in a wheelchair. My first trip to Rome to record this, and I'm so glad I did, because then it was nominated for an Academy Award.
It's Jan Daly, her new CD, When Sunny Gets Blue. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming.
Now, at another point, you had a 7-year contract. Tell me what 4-Star International is. And this is part of their TV show, Here Come the Stars, that you were talking about just a bit ago.
David Charnay, who ran it, had eclectic taste. And he had a lot of money. So he wanted to get into show business. And I think they were television, they were in publishing. Basically, when I was contracted to them, they were just opening their record company. They had writers and recording artists and were in movies. So it was kind of the end of the studio era where they had contract players. And I got in just at the very end of it, which I was so happy to. They could put us in television. They could obviously put us in recordings and stuff. We were on the MGM lot, which to me was, here I was, full circle with having Judy Garland there and all of the big casts and musicals that were there. I just felt like I kept pinching myself. Oh, my God, I'm here. And so that was such a dream come true.
Well, let's look at your time with Bob Hope. This is for the USO tours. What got you onto the USO tours? How did you meet Bob? Or was Bob just having his managers look for a talented pool somewhere?
You know, David, on Here Come the Stars, that's when I met so many amazing legends. You know, when my career spiraled from there and I had the Academy Award nominee song and, you know, just various things and opening for other comedians that he was pals with, George Golub, George Burns, and his contemporaries, Jack Benny and so forth. You know, my name was probably tossed into a pile with other singers, and I actually auditioned. And I think I reminded him of Dolores, his wife. My voice had that contralto timbre. And that's what Dolores said. She had a beautiful voice. And I think I reminded him of his wife. And I think that's why I got it. I mean, I have no idea why I got it, but I had long legs, too, which he liked.
Yeah, that's a perk.
So that's kind of how it all came about. And it was, to me, my highlight of my career. I always get emotional about it because it was also about my dad. And my father was an Air Force pilot who was shot down before I got to meet him. I'll take a moment.
Please, please, yes, yes.
Yeah. That's why I started USO Tours, because I felt close. I always break up. I don't know why, but I felt close. I always felt like he was looking down at me.
Jan Daly with Screaming Eagle PFC Ferguson. He should have paid to get in. What a reaction.
Where do I begin to tell the story of how great a love can be? The sweet love story that is...
To be able to walk out on stage and just hear this crowd of GIs, guys or gals, I mean, they appreciated us, and we went away with so much more than we gave.
That'd be a tough one, whether you feel that you went away with more than you gave, because these GIs and sailors and all these folks in the crowd, it was such a major treat.
They gave so much.
And they got the canary.
You know, and they did, and, you know, singing to the GIs, I just had this idea that I wanted to sing to a GI, so everywhere we went, I don't know how they chose them, but I got to sing to one, and what I had forgotten was they would be just as young as I. And the hardest thing, of course, was closing the show with Silent Night.
Yeah.
And boy, I learned really quick not to look down and look at the guys and gals, because, you know, they were crying. We would sing Silent Night, and I'd go, oh, my God, I'm not going to get through this. And so I eventually learned that I had to look directly at the camera, which was a long way off. It was an emotional time for everybody.
Sure. There is a wonderful YouTube clip. It's, I believe, on your website, and I should go ahead and mention multiple times that simply jandaley.com, D-A-L-E-Y, jandaley.com.
Right.
And you can find this wonderful clip. It's simply called Bob Hope Hears Our Canary. You're singing the theme for Love Story to this poor PFC. Maybe I should say lucky PFC. Now, first of all, what's with the canary bit? Bob Hope introduced you saying, here's our canary. So was that just because of the yellow dress? Or is that a story that we can't read elsewhere just yet?
No, I think he just called me his canary just because, being a singer, and he loved the way I sang. And he always used to say, oh, here comes the canary, you know. So it was both funny and maybe poignant to him. But, you know, I loved hearing it. And he always kind of caught us off guard with his funny antics. And I have to tell you one story. It was Christmas Day, actually, Long Van, Vietnam. And it was about 125.
Ooh.
And the drummer and I were suffering from heat exhaustion. I mean, I literally sang my song, got off, and fell over. So we were both kind of helping each other to the Red Cross. And we get up to the Red Cross tent, and there's Bob with a sun reflector soaking up the rays of the sun. And I'm like, this guy is old, and look at him. And we're like, he had amazing energy, and he could take little quick naps, like 15-minute naps, and he would be ready to go. And, you know, I learned from him to conserve that energy, because literally we did two shows a day, but the last shows were coming from Bangkok. So we would get in planes and helicopters, and we would have maybe 2 hours sleep that night. And luckily, we were young and could, you know, sustain our energy, but I don't know how he did it. And it was through these little naps. And he wasn't a drinker, wasn't a smoker, and I think he just thrived on the energy. And that I could understand, walking out to 35, 40,000 GIs, and that gave you the energy that was not written in books.
Wow. Once, when you were taking off after a performance, tell me about what you saw from the helicopter as you were looking back down to where you'd just been performing.
Well, you know, sometimes when you would fly and you would go and do these shows, you would kind of forget that you were in the middle of a war.
Mm.
And one day we were in Da Nang, and Da Nang had this hill, and it was loaded with GIs, and we would kind of see, we would lose the back row, you know, and, you know, we didn't think anything of it. And at the end of the show, we would always be signing photographs. And at the end of this particular show, the crew came on and said, come on, we're getting you out of here. And we said, well, we haven't finished. They said, that's all right. They said, get on the helicopter. And I said, well, all our makeup and our wardrobe, don't worry, we'll get it. We got on the helicopters. We rose above the site, and there we were surrounded by Viet Cong.
Mm. Oh, my God.
It was such a realization, and we just like, oh, my. You know, you began to forget that we were in the middle of the war, and I know that there were other times that they would not tell us because then we would be frightened, and then we would not give our performance. So we learned of other things that happened when we landed in Van Nuys, California. And that was right. I think they were correct because we wouldn't have gone to the hospital. We wouldn't have gone to here or there or stood out in the middle of a street or, you know, that kind of thing had we known the danger that we were in.
And certainly.
It's yeah,
just
they
amazing.
Knew what they were doing when they didn't tell us. And that was one that was right there in our eyesight. So we found out. And it did affect us for the next couple of shows. And then we just let it go when we had to. And that was okay.
And
that's Jan Daly and her new CD, When Sunny Gets Blue. More just ahead, you're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org.
They all volunteer for this trip, and that's why we invite them up on this last show for a quick bow and a big hand. Then, with everybody on stage, we close the show, as we did at all our shows, with Jan Daly leading us in Silent Night.
You mentioned singing Silent Night just a bit ago. So this actually brings me to Forrest Gump.
Yes.
Beyond singing, you've had an acting career as well. You actually had a bit in Forrest Gump, but it was a shot
it was not the
from
acting.
Way back
right.
when. Yeah. Spoiler alert, if a person has not seen Forrest Gump, I'm just going to spill it now that taking film clips and television clips from history and inserting him into the picture and a clip of you... This is actually one of the places that Forrest Gump got inserted. So how would a gig like this, it's not like you had to go audition because they took something old, but did they contact
exactly.
you about that since you are part of the clip?
First of all, you have to know how authentic they were in Forrest Gump with all those clips.
Yeah.
And I thought, out of the thousands of feet of footage that we had, why would they take that? Well, it was because it was 1971 and they were being very authentic. Second of all, how I learned was that my nephew said, Aunt Jan, I think you're in Forrest Gump. I said, what? And this is when it had just broken. And then my daughter had gone and seen it. They said, Mom, it's you. It's you. So, of course, I had to go see it. So next phone call was to my agent and manager and saying, what is this? Because I get residuals now. But they said, you know, we just couldn't find her. And I said, yeah, sure. and so luckily, you know, I went and saw the movie. And I am so honored to be in this movie.
I stayed with Lieutenant Dan and celebrated the holidays.
And have it run forever because it's such a classic movie. I love this movie. And not because I'm in it at all, but because it was such a beautifully shot movie and just showing how history went in a very comical way, but also very poignant. And so that's how it all kind of happened.
Now, do you end up getting residuals for it now? Since...
Absolutely.
Oh, cool. That
I love
cool.
it. Okay. When I see it on video, like on HBO or something, I go, okay, I'll be getting the check.
Nice.
And international, I mean, that's how we sustain our money coming into us and pensions and all that.
Step into the world of Samuel, where you'll enjoy more of the better life.
That's life.
That's life.
Oh, that's what people say.
Life with Sanyo is everything from vibrant color to stereo systems with brilliant sound or Sanyo audio spell.
Jan, speaking of not only acting but commercial work, at some point you went from Miss California to your Miss Sanyo.
Oh, yes.
So with that in mind...
You know, I did some really high-profile commercials, and one was Muriel Cigars. There were three of us, Susan Anton and Margaret Davies, and we were selected out of thousands of girls, which I just felt so humbled to be included in that just threesome. And I got pregnant in the middle of that campaign, and it was a multi-million-dollar campaign, which Susan Anton won. I got the cigars, and she got the contract. That's the saying goes. And when Susan and I became great friends during this campaign, I remember being 5 months pregnant, being in an actual cigar convention with low ceilings and everyone smoking.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm like having morning sickness and I'm like, and I couldn't tell anybody because I wanted to work as long as I could. And really nobody could tell that I was pregnant. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this, you know. And Susan coming in one morning and us being up late that night, and she's stealing my crackers, my saltine crackers. I'm so hungry, and I'm like, oh, and I couldn't tell her, you know, those are my saviors. So she was the one that said to me, she said, you know, I was offered Sanyo, and she said, you could do a fabulous job. And so lo and behold, I went in for the audition like the other thousands of girls, but didn't even know about it. But because of Susan, I told my agent, and I got in on it. And it was a fabulous time. I had 5 years of furnishing my home with those residuals.
Beautiful.
And it was great. And got to sing and dance, and actually got pregnant in the middle of that one. But was not so lucky, and lost that child. And
oh.
Then, yeah, and then had a hysterectomy. And for all you gals out there, you know, that have had this, the doctor said, you are like an example of how to recover from a major surgery. And in really 13 days after that, I was singing and dancing and getting B12 shots at 2 in the morning on set, doing these stupid commercials. I they weren't stupid, of course, but, you know, I think if you ever go through some major surgery that you didn't know you were going to have, that was not your choice, have something that is so vital in your life to look forward to, because it really helps that recovery. The mind has so much to do with recovery of anything, and for me, it was that going to Rome to record. That was my, like, the donkey and the corn in front of it, you know?
Yeah.
If something happens like that, maybe it's your daughter's wedding, maybe it's your grandson being born or something like that, that can get you through these hard times.
That's incredible, Jen.
That's what Sanyo's all about.
I said that's life. Sanyo.
Are you ever able to hear the song That's Life without going back to the reference of Sanyo? The
Never.
Words were changed for that.
Never. You know, what's really ironic and really comes full circle is that Four Star owned that song. Yeah, and here you go with Frank Sinatra doing it.
Yeah.
And meeting Sinatra and him saying, and this was after that I was singing That's Life, And him seeing me perform and then meeting him and then walking away and hearing him say to some of his crony friends, that girl's got it. And I just about melted in my shoes.
Yeah.
For Sinatra to say that and to have that song be a part of my life. You know, things have happened to me that I'm blessed with. But, you know, I went through a lot of hard times, too.
Oh, sure.
So those were like pieces of cake for me.
That's Jan Daly, her new CD, When Sunny Gets Blue. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Let's go back to your new disc for a second. And again, just to remind folks that there's so much more information at jandaly.com. The latest disc of yours, The Way of a Woman, this seems to be pretty much the fleshed-out version of your EP, When Sunny Gets Blue. Is that correct? Okay.
Yes, it was.
With that in mind, tell me about your relationship with Jack Siegel, the co-writer of When Sunny Gets Blue.
Well, at one point, I walked away from my music career because I had a child, and I wanted to have something that I could still do creatively. I was still going out on acting calls, but I became a songwriter, and I started writing. And I started writing really before I was even married and so forth, but I had heard about this class that Jack Siegel was teaching, so I was in his class for about 3 years, and he was really hard on the people that, I guess, now that I look back at it, that he saw promise. And he would take his red pen and, slice up your lyrics. And he was really hard on us. And at one point, he said to me, why aren't you in the recording studio? And at that point, I thought I would just write and never really sing again. I thought, well, that's, I'll do that. And he was responsible for getting me back into the studio. And we went in and recorded God Bless the Child, More Love, When Sunny Gets Blue, Cry Me a River. And I can't thank him enough for giving me a second chance being a singer again.
What was it that he said or did that really got you into the studio? You were there with him for 3 years. What was it that convinced you actually to get into the studio?
You know, it can be a teacher, it can be anyone in your life that believes in you. I mean, it could be just one person, and he or she says one thing, and it helps you creatively, And at that point, I think inside I was probably longing to sing. And in a songwriting class, all my demos that I would bring in, that I would do at home at my studio, were my voice. So he would comment. He'd pull me aside. He wouldn't say it in front of the class, but he would say it after. I want to talk to you, Jan. And it was like, okay. And thinking he was going to, just rip my song apart. And he'd say, that place where you sang that particular lyric just killed me. And I'd go, really? And I was not used to getting any compliments. So it was like icing on the cake. And those kind of comments convinced me. And then he would give me a list of songs. He said, here, I want you to listen to these songs and see which ones you want to record. And so he gave me a list, and I'd go through them, and I'd bring 10, okay, go back and look at them again, or, listen to them again. I just, gosh, bless his heart, I just wish you were alive right now. To see, that my When Sunny Gets Blue went number one on AOL jazz chart, and that this album is doing so well, and number two on the Billboard. I was just taken back. It broke out of number five, and I was praying for 99. I was saying, just get to the top 100. And I literally had to sit down when they told me.
My gosh. Well, also on this disc, some of the other standards we mentioned earlier, I believe, Cry Me a River, Skylark, one of my favorites out there, and of course, God Bless the Child, we did mention. Are these some of the standards that Jack had sent you home with, or are these just things that you had always loved and wanted to make sure that got onto a recording?
They were my favorites, and of course, When Sunny Gets Blue, it's kind of a funny story. I grew up, and then in high school, used to play Spin the Bottle. Now, for some of you young people don't know what that is, but that means when you spin the bottle and they land on two people, then you get to kiss. Well, that's how naive we were in those days. But we did it to Johnny Mathis' when Sonny Gets Blue, and his entire album. And oh my God, it was always in my mind. And when to actually meet the writer, Jack Siegel, and then to record with him, and then to now to have it be a hit, it's deja vu for me. And of course, all the songs, the standards, were always my favorite songs.
Wow. You know,
God Bless the Child.
God Bless the Child, Billie Holiday.
She, of course, was into drugs and always borrowing money from her mom.
Yeah.
And one day she came in to ask her mom for some more money. And of course, her mom knew that it was going to go for drugs. And she said, no, I'm not giving you any money.
But God bless the child that's got his own.
And Billy just walked out of the room, and before she slammed the door in her mom's face, she just said, well, God bless the child that's got his own. That's what started it.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that a great story?
I'd never heard that one.
And, you know, Jack Siegel might have told me that story, now that I'm thinking of it. You know, he was an old-timer, and he knew the stories and had them.
Wow.
I think it was Jack, yeah.
Papa may have, God bless the child, it's got his own, it's got his own.
Young, the sky is clear, and if you want to go walking, dear, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's lovely.
I would really like to ask you about one of your other albums. You've got His Light, There's Nothing Like Christmas. We spoke of When Sonny Gets Blue a little while ago as an EP. You have a couple of singles out there too, but I would like to hear about Where There's Hope, not only tipping the hat to Bob Hope, but a real labor of love, I would say. Tell me how long that had been brewing before it actually came to fruition.
You know, it had been brewing since I stopped doing the USO tours.
Okay.
He meant so much to me and to millions of people. And I did a show in Branson, and I met Les Brown Jr.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and he was doing a show there as well. I came back after this show, and I thought, I could do a tribute album to Bob Hope, and there's Les Brown Jr., and some of the guys that were on my tour are living in Branson. So I started researching. I read every book, I watched every video, and lo and behold, I thought I was going to have to pad this album. Well, he introduced the most beautiful love songs that no one really knew, because he was a song and dance man, and he was on Broadway. And, I mean, he introduced It's the Lovely, But Beautiful, I Can't Get Started, Moonlight Becomes You, That Old Black Magic, I Won't Dance, of course. He had Cole Porter and Gershwin's writing for all these guys and gals that came from Broadway and vaudeville that came west and began to make movies. And so did the composers come out here, and they were writing for people like Bob Hope, Bing Crosby. So I just love that. So I actually recorded this album in Branson with the Les Brown Band, and they were in top-notch shape, and that was great.
Les Brown and his band of renown. That was really
exactly
cool. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. There's a great shot on my website of me singing and dancing, and there's a shot of the band behind me, and I've got my leg way up. Now, I'm in a gown, but it's got a slit, and underneath my leg is the guy that has a tambourine.
He's got the
smile on his face, and it's priceless. So if you want to see this, I mean, it's one of my favorite USO shots of me in action and the band behind me.
Say his favorite, too. I've seen this picture. Doesn't the caption say, yes, Mom, I'm wearing matching panties?
I think it does. I forgot all about it. And I did have matching panties. those were the hot pants times, and we had panties underneath those. Yes, good for you, David. You did a lot of research on this.
Well, I'll try here.
Thank you.
Well, let's wrap this up then with this. Since we were just talking about Where There's Hope, when you were putting together Where There's Hope, what was the first tune that you jumped right to? Did you go for Anything Goes and It's Lovely, or what was the first thing?
I think it was It's Lovely, because it was with Ethel Merman, and they were on Broadway, and he tells a story. She said, I was on the stage, and I was singing It's Lovely, because it was written for them as a duet. And I was singing, and there was Bob at the bottom of my feet, lying there. And she said, I just kept singing, and I walked off stage, and then I began to yell at the stage manager, if you don't get that comic to straighten up, I'm quitting. I'm going to carve a niche out of that ski nose of his with my heel. So, I mean, that just grabbed me right off. And I had sang It's the Lovely in a musical, so I kind of had a link to it, and that was the first one.
Sweet. Okay, well, speaking of Bob, thanks for the memories. You sang this at his funeral, yes, or memorial service?
I did. I was asked to sing, and I was so blessed, you know, and humbled. I mean, the funeral was amazing. But we did a memorial tribute first, and then we went to the funeral. But who's who in Hollywood was there, and people that I had traveled with. And it was just an amazing, amazing day for me and for everyone to talk about him and tell stories and Sid Caesar. And, oh, golly, it had been so many years since I'd seen all these people. But, yeah, I got to sing.
I hope you could indulge me with a Bob Hope story. I understand that you spent many late nights with Bob, Jim Nabors, and Jin. And I should stress the card game, Jin.
Yes, we did. He loved his Jin games. And there would be six seats where the main stars, Jim Nabors, Jill St. John, we would pick up people sometimes in Europe or wherever we were. And I sat next to Bob through the entire thing. And Jim, we would play into the night to like 3 a.m., but Bob liked to win. And sometimes we talk about dating and love and stuff. And he would say, you know, Jan, when you're 70, you still chase women. Only downhill. Or he would have some crazy joke. But I think I only won maybe out of the 2 weeks, two games. And we played a lot of games. But he won every game. He was really good at cards. And I think he and George Burns and Jack Benny, they would all play. And, of course, Bing Crosby, they would play Jin, I think, because he was really good. It was pretty hard to get a game off him.
Awfully glad I met you, cheerio.
That's Jan Daly. Her new CD is When Sunny Gets Blue, though several other discs can be found at jandaly.com. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KBC Arts. Thanks once again to Jan Daly and to Gail Rosenberg for getting me in touch with Jan. Thanks again also to Ernest and June Siva with the Dorothy Ramone Learning Center on the Morongo Reservation. Here at KBCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Lindsay Boyd, Ben Perper, Mike Pesavento, and Izzy Gordon. Music beds and themes heard on KBC Arts, Behind Us Now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KBC Arts programs at kbcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.